Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast series, Beyond the Divide. My name is Hubert Faustmann. I'm the director of the Office of the Friedrich Ebert Foundation. Today, we have a podcast, which is a joint podcast with the Peace Research Institute, PRIO, the Cyprus office of it, and the Friedrich Ebert Foundation office in Cyprus. And I have a very nice guest to welcome here. That's Dr. Emine Eminel-Sülün, who is going to talk about Repowering the Mediterranean, Reflections on Grid Infrastructure Diplomacy. So this is about energy, peace, and cooperation in the region and how to connect maybe the different energy networks with each other to the benefit of everybody or to the disadvantage of some. I think these are issues we're going to talk about. A few words about Emine. She's assistant professor and head of the Department of International Relations at the World Peace University, Nicosia. She's a specialist on energy and geopolitics in the Mediterranean region, which comes in handsome given that we're going to talk about this. And she also works with PRIO Cyprus Center here, in the process of which she has written 5 reports. We talk about the first one now. These are joint reports from PRIO and our office here in Cyprus. Good morning, Emine.
Good morning, Hubert. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Glad to have you here. Let's start with some basics. Can you explain what interconnectors are and why they're, in your view, a necessary step to improve energy security in the East Med?
Sure. I mean, it's very important to start with the basics, I believe, and be able to define in the first place what interconnectors are, as you said. So they're essentially physical links, or you can also frame them as infrastructures that allow the transmission of electricity between different countries, basically, or across the regions. So in that respect, interconnectors, they basically connect national power grids across borders, national borders, and they provide the opportunity of harmonization of market regulations. I think the best example to give at this point would be integrated European electricity market. So it facilitates unrestricted movement of electricity through a certain space. And this certainly provides, this aligns the supply and demand dynamics, and it gives the opportunity for all sides to react to price signals as well in the market. So this is how we can define interconnectors in this context.
So how are they a necessary step to improve energy security? Let's go maybe to the link between interconnectors and the region we're living in.
Yes. Well, we shall argue that they're necessary steps certainly to improve energy security in Eastern Mediterranean, especially in the context of energy transition in today's context, in these days. We would like to really increase the pace of energy transition. We understand that we have to be quick. We demand more advancements in that context in terms of meeting the pledges within the context of carbon dioxide emissions. So this is where electricity grids and transboundary interconnectors in that context, they play a crucial role. Because we understand that integration of renewables into the grids, existing grids, requires us to increase the capacity of those grids. And interconnectors in that context, and also the stabilization of those grids, let's say. So they help us in the integration of renewable energy resources, would be wind or solar power. And when, for example, one region has surplus renewable energy, then via interconnectors, these regions or these producers, they can export it to different areas with higher demand. So it's a very good way of collaborating, so to say, in terms of stabilizing their grids, national grids as well. So enhanced grid interconnections, therefore, between nations will serve this very fundamental, cornerstone for establishing affordable, decarbonized power systems, which I believe should be seen as the cornerstone of today's energy security understanding. And for Eastern Mediterranean in particular, this is quite critical because we understand, we know that, Eastern Mediterranean at large is considered to be as a hotspot in terms of climate change. So being able to reduce carbon dioxide emissions and being able to harness the renewable energy capacity of the region pretty much has many things to do with the integration of renewables within those interconnectors, like the existing ones or the proposed ones that we will shed more light on, I believe, in the upcoming parts and upcoming questions. So if I need to sum up the significance of, therefore, infrastructure building interconnectors for the EastMed, they certainly provide diversification of energy sources. I mean, beyond renewables, they provide us, if you like, to diversify our energy mix and reduce dependency on single source. So in that respect, they enhance energy security. They provide energy trading among actors, and this is the part where we can view as the part which has something to do with the more like geopolitics of the region and geopolitics of the grid infrastructure, because if you get involved in energy trading, this means you need to trust each other and you need to basically understand the interdependency logic there. And resilience and backup, as I've just mentioned earlier, they provide backup source of power in case of shortages or emergencies, because once you are synchronized in an interconnector system, in a larger grid system, this means during times of shortages or emergencies, you can depend on basically that energy flow, basically. So in that respect, it certainly increases the resilience. So all these aspects are basically diversification, trading, resilience and backup, increasing on renewable sources can be considered as in today's context, in 21st century, the if you like, the cornerstones of energy security, how we define energy security.
How well built are the cornerstones in the region? Or in other words, which interconnectors exist, which countries are already linked with each other, and which ones are planned, and which ones, in your view, should be created?
So I think this is a very good question in terms of really understanding the existing grid infrastructure in the region. We should start by, in the first place, understanding what we have in place and how we can build further, how we can increase the capacity. So we see that the established grid infrastructure in the Mediterranean region, they're primarily guided by more national energy policies because they were established more than maybe half a century ago. Today, we have different needs. We are in a different position. As I explained, we have to face different challenges, transboundary challenges, given the climate change. So we need those national interests to align with regional global developments and policies. And this forces actually all nations, countries in the region to rethink their existing energy infrastructure. And I think transmission grids is such a reflection, it's a great reflection of this urgent need to collaborate, the urgent need to do something in a collective sense to basically address better the challenges we have to face and we're already facing. When we have a look at the interconnection zones, electricity interconnection zones in the region, we see that they're rather heterogeneous. They provide us more of a heterogeneous landscape outlook. We have continental Europe synchronous area. Synchronous means all those countries who are part of those synchronous areas, they actually they can easily have the trade among one another in this synchronous area logic. And this includes most European countries of the continental Europe synchronous area. It's a very technical term in that respect. Spain, France, Italy, Greece, Portugal, and others. These are the countries I can give as an example for that specific synchronous area. And usually we see synchronous areas being governed by, operated by some collective bodies. For example, the continental Europe synchronous area is governed by the European Network of Transmission System Operators for Electricity. This is the body responsible for maintaining maintaining the reliable functioning and interconnected power systems throughout Europe. So as you may see, before I move forward with the other synchronous areas in the region, I would like to note at this point that being able to really create such a synchronous area certainly requires actors, countries to collaborate in the first place, to govern the basically that specific issue area together. And this is what is happening in terms of ENTSO-E example. We also do have, as I said, actually in the broader region, we don't have an homogeneous landscape. So Maghreb Electricity Synchronous Zone is the other basic grid system we see, more of a collective grid system. It compromises North African countries, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya. And we understand that these nations have established also, similar to European ones, interconnected power systems. They also aim to, with this, facilitate the exchange of electricity, also to encourage cooperation in the field of regional energy. So again, maybe it's important to highlight at this point that with the help of grid systems, it's certainly with the grid infrastructure, interconnectors and synchronous areas as such, we encourage basically cooperation in the field of energy policy, regional energy policy, which is something quite significant in my understanding. And the Middle East area, we also do have a Middle East area where most countries prioritize building their own national infrastructure. And we also do have, with respect to Turkey, Turkey Electricity Transmission Company, who manages the power transmission operations and also creates its own synchronous area for connecting domestic power grids. Maybe it is all at this point, it's important to note that Turkey's geographical location, despite of that, because it spans both Europe and Asia, its power system primarily operates synchronously with the European continental synchronous area. With respect to, therefore, this overview of the existing grid systems, I think it's clear to note that there is a disparity in the level of interconnection grids among countries within the region. We would like to actualize a regional market integration, but this is still pending. I mean, this is the most ideal scenario. This is the most ideal case to be able to really synchronize all these different, distinct, heterogeneous, synchronous areas. And there are some proposals, basically, number of proposals, which aims to really facilitate this more like cross-border electricity trade and stimulate, in this respect, infrastructure development in the region. So to be able to, therefore, actualize more of a regional market, integrated regional market understanding, what is required in this perspective is certainly more infrastructure building, more cross-border electricity grid system to push forward the regional integration, energy market integration in Eastern Mediterranean and its broader region. So we do have some proposals in place, which can be also, I think, categorized under certain headlines, such as we have EastMed line, we have Greece-Turkey line, we have Egypt-Jordan-Iraq line, DU, the Middle East and North Africa line. Also Morocco, I will also delve on the Moroccan situation here. But these are some of the proposals we have on the floor in terms of on the table, in terms of deepening the integration, furthering the integration of energy market, electricity sharing, trading market in the region. If I need to dwell more on those in more specific terms and elaborate more what these lines are, in terms of EastMed line, we have basically three most notable interconnector proposals, projects in the Eastern Mediterranean, being the Euro-Asia interconnector, Euro-Africa interconnector, and Turkey-North Cyprus interconnector projects. The Great Cable, Greece-Egypt, is also a significant project that is still in a design stage. These projects, I mean, the project REGI, it aims to lay a cable from Egypt to Greece, Crete, for example, for a transportation of up to 3,000 megawatt of green energy from renewable sources. Euro-Asia, Euro-Africa, and Turkey and North Cyprus interconnector projects in a similar way, from a similar perspective. They also aim to lay a cable, subsea cable, connecting actually Israel, Cyprus in the context of Eurasia, and Egypt, Cyprus, and Greece in the context of Euro-Africa, to end the isolation of, basically, grid isolation of Cyprus, as well as to connect Israel to the European grid system. So these are quite substantial projects on the table. And Turkey and North Cyprus interconnector project in a similar fashion also has its own, basically, agenda of connecting North Cyprus to Turkey's grid. And Turkey-Greece line is another notable interconnector project in the region, which aims to really further the integration, grid integration at the regional level. Egypt-Jordan line, as I said, Jordan and Egypt, they only very recently concluded negotiations to enhance their electricity exchange. And this is in this context, this Egypt-Jordan-Iraq line can be viewed within that context and also includes Iraq as well, which is also a very important actor in this context in terms of deepening the relations as well in the region in political terms, in a region which is caught by really complex geopolitical challenges. So it is important also to really understand and go through the EU, the Middle East, and North African MENA line in a similar context. Currently, there are several important renewable energy projects and interconnectors across the North African region, with Tunisia, involving Tunisia, such as Italy-Tunisia interconnection and Tunita, and Algeria, where we have Algeria-Italy submarine cable project. They all have the same objective. They all work to connect their solar plants and Europe, basically. They all want to connect their solar plants with Europe, which is a very significant, this is a very significant objective in the context that Europe also wants to diversify its resources. Europe also wants to increase the share of renewables in its energy mix to meet tackle with the challenge of carbon dioxide emission, also to meet the pledges that the EU has made in this context. And we also do have Morocco, who is also examining interconnection projects with neighboring countries. And one such project involves building an electricity interconnection between Morocco and Portugal. So we also, in addition, see in collaboration with the Spanish electricity grid operator, Morocco evaluating in a similar fashion the feasibility of strengthening in the same with the same logic their electricity interconnection via the construction of a third transmission line. So there are existing lines, yet they want to also increase the capacity and add more transmission lines in this context. So this is how we shall, I guess, provide an outlook of what interconnectors exist in the region and what are the planned ones. The ones that I would suggest in this context, well, I believe if we manage to see the realization of the proposed ones, this will be the most ideal maybe in that context, because there are a number of problems in relation to the realization of these projects, especially financial problems we face. And also we understand that the region is embarking on a very different direction with the conflicts, increasing tensions, basically given the Israeli-Hamas war conflict at the current stage. So I believe focusing on these proposed projects and trying to really actualize them in the most feasible fashion, in a most feasible fashion, would be the most ideal scenario.
Okay, we've got a very big picture here, but it's very clear from what you said, and you spoke about geopolitical challenges that are attached to those projects. So in that context, obviously looking at politics, what is grid infrastructure diplomacy and where do you see the potential for the region?
I think grid infrastructure diplomacy should be understood better in the context of Eastern Mediterranean. It plays such a significant role. It involves the use of energy infrastructure projects, such as interconnectors, as I've just described, as a tool for diplomacy and regional cooperation. So with this, we mean building relationships, building bridges, building trust among those countries in the region simply by promoting mutual economic interests. So from an international relations perspective, this is not a new proposal, providing interdependency, providing basically a landscape where actors would be more interdependent on one another, shared basically mutual economic interests and energy resources. We believe that within this context of green infrastructure diplomacy, this will actually positively contribute to the regional stability, really via having more infrastructure in place. And when we have a look at, for example, the European case, European integration process, we see there as a very sui generis unique case where we see have both economic and political integration unprecedented. There is no other example of that across the globe. But we understand that in the EU case, for example, everything began with infrastructure building. I mean, common collective infrastructure building. So the same would be applied, the same logic would be applied to the Mediterranean region. And this is the context in which we can see grid infrastructure, we can define the notion of grid infrastructure diplomacy. In the Eastern Mediterranean, I see a huge potential of the grid infrastructure diplomacy notion. I believe that it can foster cooperation, it can promote dialogue, it can create economic interdependencies, as I've just explained, among very complex political and historical landscape. We have quite complex historical political relationships in the region. To give an example, when we focus on, for example, interconnector projects of Eurasia and Euro-Africa and Turkey and North Cyprus one, that EastMed line, the one I explained earlier, it is basically seen that the realization of these projects, actualization of these projects, they don't only need financial challenges. They don't only need to face economic, financial related investment challenges for these infrastructures, but they also need to face the challenge of, for example, maritime border issues, given the Republic of Cyprus's and Turkey's a maritime dispute in the Eastern Mediterranean. So exclusive economic zone disputes, maritime disputes, continental shelf disagreements in the region can be also impediments, can be also viewed as factors which will compromise basically grid infrastructure building in the region. So this is the point in which we need more diplomacy there, so that we need to show those actors that via diplomacy, with dialogue and with basically understanding of common, if you like, mutual economic interests, as well as mutual threats, transboundary threats, which are there and which have to be tackled which can be only tackled only by cooperation. Those actors maybe, we believe, perhaps with this infrastructure, via this grid infrastructure diplomacy, would understand that in a way, these projects, especially talking about Eurasia, Eurafrica, and Turkey and North Cyprus, none of these projects are mutually exclusive from one another. So there has to be a common understanding, collective sort of well-being understanding of all these actors. And they can be designed, they can be redesigned to create a larger Mediterranean grid instead of focusing on a couple of countries and only tiny parts of the Mediterranean region, smaller parts of the Mediterranean region. They can be understood, they can be redesigned, as I said, and go beyond, transcend those basically more of the existing geopolitical tensions and lines, and they can address in the real sense of the word the real challenge of reducing carbon dioxide emissions and harnessing as well the potential of the region.
You already went excellently in the direction of my next question, the contribution of interconnectors to the energy transition to a more environment-friendly provision of energy using renewables. What is the current energy mix, if you focus really only on the East Med in the region in the next years, and what role do these fossil fuels, renewables, and nuclear energy play in the energy mix of the region?
I think this is an excellent question, as you said, in the sense that to follow up our previous discussion, what we have said so far, because unless we look carefully and closely to the current energy mix of the region and see the dominance of the fossil fuels, we don't maybe really get the sense of the urgency of the matter. Because focusing more on the Eastern Mediterranean, we see there are various sources of energy in use, or the planned ones for the energy mix. Fossil fuels to begin with, we understand that the region has significant reserves of natural gas and oil, which have historically been major energy sources for the region. But despite the presence of these natural gas reserves in the Eastern Mediterranean, really since the 70s, we see more of an international interest in exploiting them now. And I mean, we understand that more recently, really significant discoveries and the development of major natural gas fields have highlighted the region's potential as well in the fossil fuel sector. It is a very significant area for hydrocarbon exports. But we need to basically move forward with renewables at this point and make a decision whether we will really invest in this potential, whether we will harness this potential of the region, or focus more on renewables. There is also an increasing interest in renewable energy sources, particularly solar and wind, as means to reduce carbon emissions and reliance on fossil fuels, as well as the possibilities for collaboration in the trade of renewable electricity. So based on these two domains, fossil fuels and renewables, if we need to give more, some numbers here, we understand that the energy mix is expected to become far more diversified, with more like a corresponding increase in the role of renewables in the Mediterranean, across the Mediterranean countries, because they will probably follow the path of electrification. So in this context, we have the share of hydrocarbons currently in primary energy declining, for example, but we see some projections, for example, for 2050, where we expect to see a decline in the share of hydrocarbons in the primary energy mix between 37% to 73%, and the share of renewables to increase between 19% to 57%. These are some statistics, some numbers, basically, to give an outlook of how we expect in the upcoming decades to see, if you like, more increase in renewables and sort of a decline in the hydrocarbons. Also, we do have nuclear power in the region. Well, we see that some countries, such as Turkey and Egypt as well, are exploring nuclear energy as a way to diversify their energy mix. European Mediterranean nations are progressing towards a different direction. They aim to diminish the proportion of nuclear electricity in their energy compositions, whereas we see a different momentum gaining, a different momentum in the Middle East and Turkey, where we see these countries weaving nuclear as well as an option and as a way of diversifying their energy mix. So this is, in general terms, the outlook of the energy mix, fossil fuels, renewables, nuclear in the region.
One has just to watch the news every day from the region to understand how volatile the area is in which you suggest interconnector projects. So what are the risks and weaknesses of interconnectors? Or how likely is it that you can switch each other's electricity off in case you have a conflict with each other?
There are certain risks and weaknesses, really in the context of interconnectors, and not only political ones, technical, economic, energy dependency aspect. We do have basically different dossiers in there as well. As you've just mentioned, I think the biggest one would be the political challenge. Geopolitical disputes and conflicts can certainly disrupt the operational interconnectors, to put it very simply, because these are, at the end of the day, physical infrastructure. So they can be damaged, they can be attacked, and political tensions in this context can lead to interruption of energy flows. And since we take it from an energy security perspective, of course, the uninterrupted flow of energy is the rule for energy security. It's like the priority, if we are to define energy security as a notion. So obviously such interruptions would certainly be considered as a risk. So they're vulnerable, therefore. I mean, in technical terms, these infrastructures, those interconnectors, existing ones and the proposed ones, will always be vulnerable to technical failures. And not only attacks stemming from geopolitical tensions, but also there would be some technical failures and issues relating to maintenance. So grid stability issue would be also a concern, and some maybe weaknesses of interconnectors in that respect, which can be cited in that respect. So this requires also further attention. The cost of building and maintaining, as I've just mentioned, would be quite high. So this can be also considered to be as a weakness. But obviously the advantages, I mean, pros and cons should be considered obviously carefully in this context. And perhaps another weakness or risk would have something to do with energy dependence, because obviously when you get connected to a larger grid, this means you increase your country's dependency on energy imports to some extent, which may pose a risk if there are disruptions again in the supply. So you rely on a different system. You rely on something else, which is not your national grid anymore, solely your national grid. So this certainly requires, I mean, eradicating those risks and weaknesses certainly requires, the bottom line is that there needs to be a collaboration. There needs to be a good grounds for collaboration, trust among those actors. Otherwise, all of these risks and weaknesses would certainly be matter of concerns in case of interconnections. So maybe to sum up, interconnections between, therefore, two markets, they certainly allow each nation to offer energy security to the other in an event of local operational challenge. But because of the factors I've just listed, we see there are also some drawbacks. I would like to, before I finalize this, this answer, I would like to really describe this with a metaphor, actually. A rope party of mountaineers is a very good metaphor for that. The rope reduces the risk of individuals falling, but increases the risk of everyone falling. So this can be considered as basically, therefore, this should be taken into consideration.
Thank you. I'm not sure if I'm encouraged by the metaphor. Anyway, let's look at the technical side of things a bit. So once your country connects to an interconnector, what does a country have to do in terms of its local or national grids? Yeah, in order to be able to use that energy, you can just in a way plug in and hello, everybody's welcome. Or it also requires massive changes within countries to get electricity from an interconnector.
It certainly requires some investments in the first place. They need to invest in infrastructure. So they need to develop and upgrade their existing national grid infrastructure, because being able to get connected to a larger grid system means you need to increase your technical requirements, technical capacity, because there will be further technical requirements of this larger grid. So investments, further investments. has to be there. Regulatory cooperation, you need to establish agreements and regulatory frameworks for cross-border energy trading and interconnector operations. So it doesn't happen a day once you get connected and synchronized. You need to have in place all the agreements and framework, basically, which you will work in. And obviously, better political relations. You need to be able to resolve some issues, trust issues, because they can also hinder, as I've explained earlier, your cooperation. So establishing all these sort of regulations and frameworks would definitely require going beyond, at least to some extent, geopolitical issues. And energy policy alignment. This is another important point where we see a national energy policies in case of interconnections, transboundary interconnections, requiring to align with some more regional objectives to facilitate interconnector developments. So it certainly requires, therefore, amendments and certainly requires some efforts, so to say. And the bottom line of this effort should be considered as, can be viewed as trust and the belief that even if we have some drawbacks, even if we have some risks collectively, as I gave in the example of the as I mentioned in the metaphor, still there is a lot to gain collectively as well. So the tricky part here is that you need to act together; otherwise, you will definitely fall.
What role could smaller grids and off-grid solutions play so that we don't fall? Or if we are falling, is there any chance that this can soften the crush?
Off-grid solutions, smaller grids, decentralized solutions are definitely important. Both for the region and also in global terms in today's context. These are renewable energy systems which generate and distribute power without reliance on a centralized electricity grid. And this is why they're categorized as standalone or off-grid systems, or they can just utilize mini-grids. These systems, they certainly offer a broad spectrum of services, ranging from lighting, appliance operation, cooking, heating, and some other services like cooling, both in urban and rural regions. But we understand that these smaller grids, off-grid solutions, are rather considered to be as options in underdeveloped contexts, countries, where it's not possible to connect certain areas, rural areas, to larger electricity grids. So in that context, they certainly provide such a huge flexibility, especially, as I said, in remote areas. So this sense of flexibility, the notion of flexibility they provide, led us to really look at how the ways in which they can be harnessed, they can be used also in, for example, in the Mediterranean region. But I believe this requires additional research to explore advantages of implementing such a system in the context of Eastern Mediterranean region. But as I said, having such kind of more decentralized units, decentralized grids, would actually definitely help also for the Mediterranean countries or for the Eastern Mediterranean countries, maybe, or not at the, actually at the local level, to come up with some solutions, maybe short or medium term solutions in that context.
Let's end up on a positive, on a dream note, or to stay within your metaphor. If the countries of the region are mountaineers and you would go on a hike, what kind of hike would be the dream hike? How should energy cooperation, interconnectivity in the region ideally look like? You alluded to it earlier by saying if they implement what is planned, we're all happy. Is that the hike you would recommend, or is there a little detour or an additional mountain you would recommend for the mountaineers of the region to climb in order to have a beautiful view?
I don't see any alternative there, to put it briefly. I don't see any alternative, any other roads to take for the countries in the region, because such plans, such sort of shortcuts, for example, or alternative roads will maybe lead them to the same place, but they won't be able to, if you like, really actualize in the real sense of the word, a regional electricity market that can, where in which they can enjoy more, for example, energy trade. So only, I believe, fully integrated and fully interconnected regional energy market can provide us the full view, full landscape, beautiful view at the top of the mountain. So this would enable actors efficient energy trading, as I have just said, integration of more renewables, which is a must for us, and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions in that context. So my dream scenario, therefore, for the Eastern Mediterranean would basically to have this, to be able to have this economic cooperation, economic integration in that respect via interconnectors, energy and electricity interconnectors, which would also push actors in the region to require more political stability, which would require them to find some ways, instead of trying to find ways to go into different directions from the rest of the group, to find a more, to be creative, if you like, to put an effort to be more creative to resolve the existing conflicts. I know this sounds a bit idealistic and naive, but I think as researchers, us, we're not politicians, as researchers, we have the duty of really laying down what is ideal at the same time. Obviously, what is realistic as well. But I think it's more realistic to believe that we need basically, we need more renewables. It's more realistic to see that we won't be able to survive with this level of greenhouse gas emissions, with this pace of climate change and global warming. So this is, for me, the reality on the ground. So we should move forward from the reality of political tensions and geopolitics and regard my, for example, scenario as naive. And we should see that more realistic is that we're all going to fall together, not because of basically any other factor, not because of any other reason, but simply because of not being able to collaborate on significant matters of concern for the region. So we should be committed to sustainable and low carbon energy future. This is the basic, the feature. This is what the feature is for us. Timeline for achieving this dream scenario. Yes, I mean, I understand it would depend on number of factors, including all these political, geopolitical tensions, pace of infrastructure development, financially speaking, also, you know, being able to invest financially to those, I mean, being able to find funding for all these. These would make it difficult to predict precisely when such a reality would become, such a dream would become a reality. But as I said, we just need to change our lens. We just need to change the filter here to see that our reality should, our future should basically be shaped with an understanding of low carbon energy future. That's basically where I reside. Well, this is where I stand in this context.
Thank you so much, Emine. That was a very, very fascinating conversation with you about and making a powerful argument in favor of interdependence in energy via interconnectors in the region. I think we learned a lot. Thank you so much. It's fascinating talking to you. I said you can listen to this podcast, which is a joint podcast from the Peace Research Institute Oslo, the Cyprus office of it, and the Friedrich Ebert Foundation office here in Cyprus, this time in cooperation with one of our two mother offices, the Peace and Security Project in Beirut. Warm regards to our colleagues there. You can listen to that on the websites of PRIO, but also of our website, which is cyprus.fes.de, where you also find the other podcasts within the series, Beyond the Divide. Thank you so much, Emine, again.
Thank you, Hubert, for the invitation. It was such a pleasure.
And I hope we motivated everybody to go mountain hiking this weekend. Take a rope. Don't fall. Yeah, take care.
Yeah,
okay. Bye-bye.